Welcome back, everyone, to the Chaos Ball Podcast. I had a week's hiatus. I appreciate the understanding of my schedule. I had, you know, sometimes personal life schedule gets in the way of recording this podcast for many reasons. But I'm back this week. I should have another one next week, too. Back to the regularly scheduled programming. But I'm back after last week's hiatus. And, you know, I had more time to marinate and watch more Mariners baseball in that time. So, not the end of the world, but I hope you all had a good last week watching the Mariners. It was, you know, it was a pretty good week. I'm kind of glad I waited. Like, I didn't choose to wait to record, to release this episode this week, but I'm glad that now I can talk about the Royals series and kind of glaze over the Athletics and the Angels series. That would have been the focus of last week's episode, probably. And those were, you know, those were good series, albeit kind of boring. Like, the Mariners handled business. Because I had the pod come out after they almost mopped the Astros, but they took 3 of 4 at home against the Astros. The spirits were high. I said they needed to take care of business against the Angels at home, and they did. They swept them. The Angels are a garbage team. They are just really bad. They put them in the dirt, and then they went to Oakland to play the better team in California among the AL West squads, and they took 2 of 3 from the A's. They played some close games against the A's. The A's are a pesky little team. They're a pesky little team in a different way than the Royals. And I'll talk about the Royals series later. I have a couple of things to say off rip, but the Royals series, man, it went about exactly as everyone probably expected it to. But I'm recording this a day early on Wednesday, so this should come out on Thursday. And I'm also recording before the White Sox game today because it's not a day game. I thought I might be able to watch the day game on Wednesday, but it's not a day game. It's a night game. All night games against the White Sox this week. But they've taken the first two games against the Sox. The first game was one of the more Mariners games of the year, I would say. It was not only a Bark at the Park game, it was the Saucy's Posse game. They had the shirts going for Tyler Saucedo, which was pretty sweet, but it was almost a disastrous opening game of the series against maybe the worst team in the league. They got this close to getting shut out at home against the White Sox, but luckily the White Sox bullpen said, "No, we're good. We're going to give this up." It's the team that has blown the most leads this year due to their bullpen. Their bullpen is really not good. And we got walked off once again by Cal Raleigh, by Big Dumper. Again, Mr. Dump dumped all over a pitch in the bottom of the ninth. And it was glorious. I mean, once Luke Rayleigh laid down that bunt, I knew we were winning that game. Like, once the game was tied and tied in that fashion, it was like, okay, now we're winning this one. It's just games Mariners, this Mariners team wins. The past few years, they've been one of the best teams in the eighth and ninth inning in terms of coming back and winning games. It's been part of their identity. Part of their identity is the fact that they're always in those close games to begin with, right? So that's part of it. You know, it'd be nice if they would just win more games outright, but Cal is proving to be one of the more clutch players I've ever watched on the Mariners, and he did it again Monday night against the White Sox, and thank God they won that game. Cal, in terms of clutch statistics as well, Cal is top 10 in Fangraphs and Baseball Reference in terms of their, like, clutch stats. Clutch is an interesting stat. I tweeted about it the other day. It's a little silly, like, thinking about a stat and boiling down clutch into a number, but this season Cal Raleigh is in, I think, a 7th in Baseball Reference in terms of clutch and 10th overall in Fangraphs in terms of clutch. And how Fangraphs defines it is how much better or worse a player does in high leverage situations than he would have done in a context neutral environment. And it's weighted on the same scale as win probability added, if you're familiar with that stat too. So I think clutch is a fun stat to look at. I more looked at that to confirm, like, just confirmation bias to the eye test, and it held up. Cal has been one of the more clutch players in the league this season, and his numbers in high leverage situations late in games the past two seasons have been tremendous. It just seems to be, the moment is not too big for him, it seems, and especially at home. And that is a good segue to the Mariners' record at home and their record overall and their standing in the AL West. This team has been cleaning up at home this year. They're 23-11 at home and 16-19 on the road. So not amazing on the road. They had a tough road trip on the East Coast too. They played some really good teams. They played some subpar teams at home. A little bit of a factor. But right now they're 39-30. Their Pythagorean record has them at 36-33. I mean, they have an 11 run differential, which isn't great, but 39-30 with an 11 run differential just tells me maybe they're getting a little lucky. But also, I think they're literally just wringing out every possible win from this team so far. And the fact that they've put themselves in this position is huge. I wish I lived in the Seattle area still. Even Washington State. Even the Northwest. I don't. I wish I lived there still because 23-11 at home, it generally rules when your sports team is elite at home. It is good for everyone involved. It's good for players. They want to keep playing there. It's good for the fans. Obviously, it's the best for the fans. And as a baseball team that wants to make money, if you look at it through that lens, which is, you know, kind of lame, but it's good for just the team's financial health in general. And I'm always looking out for John Stanton's pockets. I'm worried about the guy. I think he's going broke. And the team being really good at home just draws more fans. And I think drawing more fans, just completely not looking at the business side, drawing more fans is just good in general. It makes the team more attractive for prospective players, and it makes the home field advantage better. And it's not tangible. You can't really put into, it's not like clutch stat. You can't really put a number on what home field advantage means to the players. But the players playing in front of more and more fans at home is obviously, it's a good thing. They want to keep winning for the fans too. So impressive. Impressive that they've managed to do that at home this year. And I hope they keep doing it. It's part of it is just because they built such an elite pitching staff, and they're just like, their will to win games like that is pretty insane. And it's a credit to the players, credit to the coaching staff, especially credit to Cal Raleigh. One of the most clutch hits in Mariners history to send them to the postseason to end the drought. And the man just keeps kind of producing in clutch moments. The next game, he had a go-ahead double in the bottom of the seventh. Another clutch hit. And I don't know if it was a high leverage situation. It was easily a medium leverage situation. They needed to take that lead. But just keeps getting it done. And it was after, it's big for Cal. He was slumping. He was slumping big time. And even in the past 2 weeks, he's raised it to be similar to league average, close to league average. But before that, the latter half of May was not a good time for Cal Raleigh at the plate. He was striking out like 40% of the time, not really hitting balls hard, but this has been a good week for him, obviously at the plate, but also probably just mentally. And he's gotten some time off as well. Mitch Garver has been catching a few more games this season, and I think that's only best case for Cal. If Garver can handle the pitching staff well, then I'm not concerned about having Cal DH a little bit to just rest his legs, especially because if you're going to want to extend that guy, you want to, you know, keep his legs as healthy as you possibly can in these early years. So when he's ideally on the Mariners into his early to mid 30s, he's still able to be a good player for you. But Cal Raleigh, Mr. Clutch. And with that, before I get in my copious amounts of notes that I have to talk about today, that we'll see if I get to all of them, maybe I will. I mentioned the Mariners are 39-30 with an 11 run differential. Again, it's just, they're just the wet towel of baseball wins. They're just wringing out every last drop so far this season. And it's something they have kind of done in recent years. The team identity has been like pitching and not amazing offense. Obviously, like, it's not by design to have a bad offense, but the pitching is really good. And I think it's more just mentality. We had the fun differential a few years ago, and I just don't know if they're ever going to be an elite run differential team, especially if they build it on pitching first. But the fact that they can just grit these wins out is massive, I mentioned, and it's even more massive when your division is garbage and the AL West is bad. The Mariners at 39-30 are up in this division right now by 6.5 games on the Texas Rangers, who are 31-35. Earlier today, the Houston Astros lost, and the Mariners are eight games ahead of the Houston Astros. On June 12th, they're 8 games ahead of the Houston Astros. If they win tonight and the Rangers lose again tonight, they'll be 7 games ahead and 8.5 ahead of the Astros. The Angels and the Athletics in the rearview mirror, they are not relevant anymore. It is astounding that they're this far ahead and first in June. I've literally never seen this in my lifetime. I was technically alive in 2001, but was I a sentient human? Absolutely not. I was not watching baseball. Maybe I was looking at the screen, definitely didn't know what was going on. This is something I've never seen in my life. I've never seen them win the division, and I've never seen them have a division lead this far into the year, and it's kind of freaking me out. It's freaking me out because I know they're not like an amazing team. You know, like they're not just looking at the American League, they're not better than the Yankees. They're not better than the Orioles. And then they might be a little bit better than the Red Sox, Blue Jays, and Rays, but I don't think those teams are that far off from the Mariners. And record-wise, they are, but quality-wise, we'll see. I don't think the Mariners are better than the Guardians. I don't think they're better than the Royals. I don't think they're better than the Twins. Maybe they're on par with the Twins. And then I do think the Mariners are better than the Rangers and Astros, but I don't think the gap is this big. Particularly because the Rangers are going to get pitching back and the Astros as well. And both of those teams have not much incentive to sell. The Rangers especially don't. The Astros is really intriguing to see what they do at the trade deadline. If they are, even if this holds and by the last week of July, they are 8 to 11-ish games back of the division lead. They could sell. I mean, right now, just looking at the wild card, and the American League wild card is way more competitive than the National League. The Astros are 5.5 back of the wild card. So if they're in striking distance of the wild card, I don't think they sell. Like, I don't think they'd sell Kyle Tucker if they're within 6 games of the wild card, even in July. I still think they could probably make a run. It's funny, if they're 31-38, if they were in the National League wild card, they would be like 3 games back. The National League wild card is a cesspool of mediocrity. The Braves are winning that wild card right now. The Padres in second, 37-35. The Giants have the third wild card spot at 34-35. I mean, I talked about this at the start of the season. There's a couple good teams, and there's a lot of just mid to not good. And I think no matter how you look at it, I think it waters down the trade deadline. Because there's less sellers overall if there's so many teams within striking distance. And when you look at the bad teams that are truly bad, there's a couple players maybe on these teams that could be traded. The White Sox have like 2 or 3 maybe. The A's, 1 or 2. The Marlins, like a couple interesting ones. Like the Mets, not a whole lot. The Rockies don't have much. The D-backs, again, there's not like elite players really on those bad teams. It's because they're bad. So it just kind of muddies down the trade deadline. But I'm just astounded the Mariners are this far ahead in June, and I'm scared. I'm a little frightened, I'll be honest. It's a lot of responsibility to be in first place and not have to squander it. But everything has fallen their way in the past couple weeks. The Rangers and Astros, again, they just kind of keep losing. Mariners 7-3 in their last 10, Rangers 4-6, and Astros 5-5 in their last 10. The Rangers have a 0 run differential, and the Astros have a 5 run differential, the Mariners with 11. I think the AL West is comfortably the division with the worst run differential in the league. Yeah, I'm just doing the quick maths in my head right now. They definitely are. This division is really bad. But that aids the Mariners, baby. I think in my preview, I said if the Mariners were in the Central, I'd give them a lot better chances to win their division. And it turns out I was completely wrong, and a lot of people were. And it turns out the AL West is a new AL Central. And the Mariners are lucky to be in this division because they play their division a lot. a lot in the next couple months. Like, they didn't play the Angels until a couple weeks ago for the first time. I'm just looking up live right now the Tankathon strength of schedule odds. I'm pretty sure the Mariners have the lowest. It's the Angels and Mariners are tied now for the weakest strength of schedule remaining in the league. So the Mariners have played a lot of tough teams. They have a 6.5 game cushion right now in June. And looking ahead, they have tied for the lowest strength of schedule rating in the league. They play the White Sox 5 more times. They play the Marlins 3 times. The A's and Angels, they play 7 and 10 more times, respectively. That is huge. 17 more games against the Angels and the A's this year could legitimately be the difference in the division. Like, the Mariners could just go 500 from here and they could win the division right now, like outright, based on how the Astros and the Rangers have been playing. But the division lead's scaring me, but that is all I'll talk about on the division right now. I'm hype. I'm hyped they're this far ahead in first place. But now, my notes. My notes for the week. My first note. I wish the MLB app wasn't awful. Like, I really wish it wasn't terrible. It's so bad. It's never been good. It's the MLB At-Bat app. And there's no real good alternative. But this week has been especially bad. The last week they were having issues. I couldn't, like, click on anything. Some stuff just keeps timing out for me. And it's like, maybe it's because I have a really old phone and I haven't updated my iOS in a while. Could be that. But even a fully functioning MLB At Bat app is like a mid app at best. It really isn't good. It's a much better viewing experience for me. If I have Savant open on my computer while watching the game, that is my ideal viewing experience. Even Savant on my phone trumps the MLB At Bat app at this point, just using a desktop or using the mobile browser on my phone. Is there an alternative that's better? Like, the ESPN app is garbage too. I can't use that for baseball. I don't think there's an alternative. I haven't done much digging. I'm just thinking, if you are a soccer fan and you're not using the FotMob app, you should be. And that's the type of thing I'm thinking of. There needs to be a FotMob app, but for baseball. The problem is, it's Major League Baseball is one brand, and like, FotMob has every European, American, global soccer league on it. So I don't know if they had to license it or not. I need a FotMob for baseball. I don't know, put the minor leagues in there, put college in there, put the global, put the MPB and the KBO in there for all I care, and the Mexican league. Like, have FotMob for baseball. If you're listening to this and you develop apps, slide into my DMs or email me. I don't have any money, but I can talk. I can speak. I can market an app for you, and I think there's an opportunity here. We just might have to license with MLB, and that might be a little bit of a problem. But I wanted to complain about that off rip. And now, I have two players I'm going to focus on in this episode, and then I have a few more notes after this of just what's been going on. But the two players I will focus on a little bit in this episode is Dominic Canzone and Bryce Miller. Dominic Canzone I'll focus on first. Coming into the year, if you recall, I was a little worried about this outfield situation. And now I'm even more worried. Because even the outfield with subpar corners, which I somewhat expected, was still going to have a potential 5, 6, 7, 8 war player in center field. And Julio has played like a 3 to 4 war player, you know. And Julio, we saw it last year. You know, he can have 2 generational weeks and basically catapult himself into the MVP conversation. And he very well might do that again. But Julio not especially carrying the outfield has me a little bit more worried about the situation here. Especially the alternatives. Because the alternatives even in the low minors, there's not very many outfielders in this system right now that I'm super confident in. There was Jonathan Clase, and we've seen he might just not be ready. The strikeout and swing and miss is just not great, and his defense, it doesn't grade out especially well, interestingly enough, considering how fast he is. And you had Mitch Haniger, who is so much older, who just looks I was going to say so much older than last time we saw him in a Mariners uniform. He's like 2 years older. He just doesn't look good. He looked kind of cooked when he played last year, and this year he has not been great, and the defense has been bad. It is not... I'm not ready to declare it a Raul Ibanez situation, but, like, we're getting there. Or even, like, a Jesse Winker. But, no, we're not quite there yet. And then there was Dominic Canzone and Luke Raley. Now, Luke Raley has made me feel much better about the outfield situation, even though he's been playing a little bit of first base. I think Luke Raley should be, at this point, the everyday left fielder, and he kind of is. Thankfully, he has been a light in the corner outfield darkness this season. And then Julio is like, even when Julio is like 100 to 110 WRC plus player, which is still fine, we expect him to be better. But even if he's league average at the plate, he has played every game this season. He's probably going to swipe 30 to 40 bags. He's going to play gold glove defense in center field. That's like a baseline three war player, even if he's league average at the plate, which we know he can be way better than that. So even Julio's floor is higher than all the other outfield ceilings combined, in my opinion. And then there was Dominic Canzone. And they signed Victor Robles. I'm not going to talk about Victor Robles. I don't think he's going to be on the team in 2 weeks. Dominic Canzone. This was the kind of the wild card. This was kind of the wild card of the outfield. He showed last year the intrigue of why he was kind of thrown into that trade package with the D-backs. Is he can really impact the ball. He hasn't shown truly elite exit velocities. Like, I think his max in his career is like 111, which is really solid, but it's not like we've seen him hit a ball 116 miles an hour. But we've seen him, like, his home runs are pretty consistently hit really hard. Like, he can still hit the ball pretty damn hard. The concerns were just swing and miss, and also with him defense. And I will say right now, before I get into him at the plate, he reminds me of a baby giraffe when he's running around the outfield a little bit. He just looks kind of gangly, uncoordinated. And I say that someone, you know, sitting in an office chair recording a podcast, definitely not able to play a major league outfield. So bear that. Keep that in mind. But he just kind of reminds me of a baby giraffe out there. And last season, it was tough. Some of the routes he took to the balls last season were so bad, and I was worried about that this season. But he's made like 4 diving catches this year that I can remember. I think his defense has improved even in like the small sample we've seen this season and the small sample we saw last season. He's been worth 2 outs above average according to StatCast. So technically he's been above average so far, so credit to him. He just looks awkward doing it, but if the outs above average continue to be above 0, I'll freaking take that, especially over Mitch Haniger. But him at the plate. The concern was swing and miss, and it's abundantly clear that the main concern here is breaking pitches. It's a Jared Kelnick type of situation where pitchers have the data, they have the videos, they have a decent enough sample at this point to be like, all right, we're just not going to throw this guy a fastball. No four-seam fastballs for Dominic Canzone. And I'll get into the numbers in a second. It hasn't looked great at the plate this year. I will be quite honest with you. He is slashing 176, 253, 412. 412 slugging is not terrible. To really be a high strikeout corner outfield slugger, I'm going to need that to tick up to like 450. 470 even, you know, maybe approaching 500. That might be too much to ask. The on-base percentage I don't think is ever going to be too high. 176 is really bad. However, his BABIP is 170, which even though he's a pretty fly ball heavy guy and when he hits ground balls, he doesn't hit them very hard, I don't think he's going to be a particularly high BABIP fella because it's going to be a lot of home runs or weak fly balls for him, I think, at this point. And so with more fly balls in play, that's going to be lower batting average on play. And a home run is not a ball in play, so it's not factored into the BABIP. So I think he's going to be a lower BABIP guy in general, but 170 is really, really low. So I expect the average to at least tick up a bit, especially where his hard hit rate's at right now. His isolated power is 235. Like, that's solid. So I expect him to not be a, you know, below the Mendoza line hitter all year. But even then, even if he ticked up to 230, I still would kind of need the OPS to be more than 720. I mean, that's slightly above average, but it's abundantly clear he's going to need to learn this year, midseason, how to hit the insane amount of breaking pitches he's getting. And I've kind of tweeted a few times this year what he's seen at the plate game by game. And I looked at the numbers, and he is leading the league in a couple interesting categories here. So the league's figured out he can hit four-seam fastballs, especially four-seam fastballs up in the zone. If you give him one, he might hit it 110 miles an hour over the fence, which is great. We love that. We love that. But pitchers are going to be pretty wary about that now. So he's getting fed breaking balls consistently. So 19.4% of all the pitches he's seen this year have been curveballs. If you have no frame of reference here, that's number one in Major League Baseball among qualified hitters. Number one. He's seeing the most curveballs per plate appearance, technically, of anyone in baseball. And he has a zero run value on that pitch. So he's not being a direct negative on the curveball. But also, that's not good. It's a zero run value. So, I mean, if he's getting mostly zero run value out of the pitch he's seeing the most, that's not great. And then you go down the line to the pitch he's seeing second most. It's changeups. 18.3% of the pitches he's seen this year have been changeups. That's fifth overall in Major League Baseball. He has a negative two run value on changeups. The pitch third here is the four-seam fastball. The four-seam fastball he's seeing the third most share of any pitch. 17.7% of the time he's seeing a four-seam fastball. That is the lowest percentage in the league, again, among qualified hitters. He has a one run value on that pitch. So he can still do damage on them despite not getting many, but that's the point is, like, I think pitchers and teams will live with him in one series, maybe hitting a home run off a four-seam fastball, but he's just going to continue to get a steady diet of changeups, curveballs, sliders. Sliders is the next pitch, and then there's like four other pitches with less than 10%. So he's seeing curveball, changeup, four-seam, slider as the vast majority of his pitches. The slider, he has a negative one run value on too, so just throwing that in there. He's not leading the league in the slider percentage, but he's also not hitting sliders well either. But curveballs and changeups, man, he's just getting consistently fed these pitches. I knew he was getting a lot of these. I didn't know it was leading the league, basically. He's going to have to adjust. I mean, obviously, it's not rocket science here. But that, it worries me a little bit. And I couldn't believe he was number one curveball percentage. So that's Dom Canzone. I mean, he's still hovering right around league average production, which is better than what Mitch Haniger has done. So we'll at least take that. But it's something I'm going to need to see him do a little bit better against. Maybe curveballs. He's seeing the most curveballs. Maybe he just chooses to absolutely spit on curveballs. Maybe he just doesn't swing. Maybe he shouldn't swing at them at all. That'd be a strategy. But that was Dom Canzone. I just wanted to highlight that because I looked those numbers up the other day and I was like, oh, good God. Again, another kind of confirmation bias, where I knew he was getting a lot of breaking pitches. He's getting the most. He's getting the most curveballs and the fifth most changeups and the least amount of fastballs. So obviously, pitchers are pitching him one particular way. And then the other player I wanted to focus on before getting into some other just random notes from the week, Bryce Miller. Bryce Miller has been great this year. His ERA has been catching up to his FIP, though. I think he had like a, what, 1.0 ERA in April. I basically said that's not going to continue. Anyone could have told you that. And his ERA now sits at 3.81. That's still great. That's still below league average. I think league average this year is like 4, unless I'm completely wrong. But I want to talk about one thing. We know his fastball is special. He coming up as a prospect, we knew, even more so than Logan Gilbert, I'll even say. It was going to be four-seamer, special four-seamer. And that can only get you so far. I mean, that is super, like, that's a super important pitch, obviously, to have be your best pitch. And his is fairly unique in terms of just the shape of it and the spin. But obviously, at some point, you got to throw up something else other than the four-seam fastball. And last year, later in the year, he threw so many four-seam fastballs, the value of it kind of dwindled as he kept pitching. Because guys were just going to sit fastball and make him throw strikes with his off speed. And his slider was actually came along last year as a pretty decent pitch. This year, the slider hasn't been very good at all. And he's throwing it way less. But I want to talk about his secondary stuff. So his fastball this season, just before I talk about the secondaries, he was throwing it 58% of the time last year. This year, he's throwing it 44%. He's mixing in a lot of other pitches. Notably, he added the split finger, and then he's really ramped up his sinker usage, especially in recent starts. So his secondary stuff has been part of why he's just been an improvement on last year, and it's a fairly linear improvement for a young pitcher, comes up with an elite four-seam, leans on that heavy in his rookie season, and then the next season he makes some adjustments to his secondaries, and I think in particular, sinker, split finger are his two best secondaries by far, and those play especially well off his four-seam fastball. It's no wonder he's throwing those. Those are the second and third most usage pitches for him this season, and I think Cal just kind of keeps calling that because it plays really well off of his four-seam. His four-seam has a tremendous amount of ride to it, a lot of backspin, and so the sinker offers some horizontal movement, and then the split finger is basically just an opposite pitch to the four seam and can tunnel really well with that pitch. His split finger by run value on Baseball Savant is 4 this year. That is the most of any of his pitches. The sinker is 2, fastball is 3. The sweeper and slider are -2 and -3. Those haven't been quite as good. But I think the biggest change here is obviously the four-seam usage is down 14%, and then his secondary stuff is now sinker around 20% and split finger around 17%. Split finger has been, it's been phenomenal this year. It's been awesome to see him throw that pitch. Just the sinker has been more of an out pitch, a weakish contact pitch, more a strike pitch as well. The fastball he's still going to use the most, obviously, but it's the split finger and the sweeper that he's trying to use as his putaways. The slider has just not been good this year. Not been good at all. Really, he's still kind of he has a decent strikeout and whiff rate on the pitch, but when it's in the zone, it's getting hammered. And I think it's just because it's not a particularly elite moving pitch. It's similar to Logan's. It's more of a gyro slider, so a lot more downward movement than horizontal movement. And when it's been in the zone and it hangs up in the zone, which he's hung it. I can think of a few home runs in my head right now. It's been bad. So when he locates it well, it can be a really useful pitch. We've seen how useful it can be for Logan when he locates that slider off of his fastball. And these two pitchers are quite similar. But he just hasn't been able to locate the slider super well. Whereas the complete opposite with the sinker, he's been able to locate that recently really, really well. It's not a particularly big whiff or K pitch at all, but it's a very much get me over pitch when guys are expecting a fastball and he drops a sinker in there, or just like obviously it's a sinker, so it's more of a, you know, ground ball out inducing pitch. But the split finger is the secondary pitch that's the one this year. It's been awesome. It's been awesome to see him use that and just add that to his arsenal. It's the year of the split finger. The split finger is back in baseball. The usage has jumped up significantly. And you've seen the manager's rotation. The manager's rotation is kind of a microcosm of the splitter usage. You've seen Logan use it, Kirby use it, and now Bryce Miller using it a lot this year, 17%. And just some quick numbers on that pitch. He is striking out 34% of batters with the splitter. 34% K percentage with the splitter is tremendous. And then a 24% hard hit rate. And just as a comparison, his fastball is a 52% hard hit rate. So cut that in half when he uses the splitter. Just been phenomenal. And he gets tremendous vertical movement on it. It's not a horizontally splitter pitch. Because of the way he throws it, he's so up and down. It's so vertical. Like, go look up Kevin Gausman's splitter, and it's the opposite. It's a lot of vertical movement too, to be fair, but it's a lot of horizontal. Bryce Miller is just vertical. It's just straight up and down. It's devastating. It is a devastating pitch. Drops completely off the plane, off the swing plane. It's just beautiful. It's just a beautiful pitch. And I just wanted to talk about Bryce Miller and hype up his secondary stuff a little bit. It's coming along. Even if, like, I don't know if the sweeper is his pitch. Maybe it is. Maybe he gets rid of the slider. He's throwing the sweeper a little bit more than the slider this year, but I don't know. I just don't know. He's thrown a cutter a few times this year too. But the big thing is, if he has three good pitches in four-seam sinker and splitter, that's a good jumping off point, because then maybe he can narrow it down to working with the pitching coaches and working with Cal to be like, okay, we're gonna go sweeper or slider, and maybe he just completely stops throwing one of them and focuses on one that they think is the best for his arsenal. And then he has four just good pitches in sinker, splitter, fastball, and a sweeper or a slider, whatever he wants to go with. Just really impressive. This pitching staff is awesome. It seems like they're all kind of nerds, and they all learn from each other. Like, Luis Castillo maybe is the least nerdy, and I say that because he's definitely changed his pitch usage, but he's still just like, I have an elite fastball, and I'm going to throw the shit out of it, and my slider moves a lot, and my changeup is sick. Like, he hasn't changed his arsenal much. The usage, yes, but not the pitch arsenal a whole lot. Whereas, like, Logan and George and, like, Bryce and Brian, all, I just first named all those guys. All of them are so early on in their careers still compared to Luis Castillo. They're all just, like, toying around with shit. They're just adding different pitches, playing around with, like, different shapes of the pitches that they have. Bryce Miller has started to play around with timing on the mound, which I love, because, you know, maybe if he realizes guys are only going to sit fastball and he still wants to throw his elite fastball a lot, you mess with timing and that will help the pitch for sure. And I love when pitchers do that. I love, because it looks silly and it can really anger the hitters. And I think that's funny. But that's Bryce Miller. I just wanted to mention his secondary stuff, particularly the sinker. I think the sinker's key. He needs the horizontal movement pitch in there, and the sinker can be that, and it's been great. It's been great to see this year. So that was Dominic Canzone, that was Bryce Miller, and now some notes. But also, past couple weeks, who's been good? Ty France, before he got hurt, unfortunately, was great the past week before he got hurt. Has looked a lot more like Ty France. The stats back it up. But the eye test is more what I was looking at. The stats are good, but I don't even need to read the stats. If you watch Ty France in the beginning of June, before he just got hurt, it looked a lot more like a 2021 Ty France type of season. He was spitting on pitches out of the zone. He was just kind of grinding out at bats and punishing pitches in the middle of the zone. And if he can do that, man, that would be huge. That would be huge. He's on the IL right now, but hope he's back soon. Luke Raley has ramped up his production yet again. Mitch Garver's been quite good at the plate since hiking his socks up to his knees, which is great. I think he should go even farther. I think he should go stirrups. And also, when I think of stirrups and Mariners, I think of Brad Miller, like, immediately. Shout out to Brad Miller. So it's been good to see. If Garver can do this, the team needs him to do this, because I don't think they acquire a DH at the deadline. They signed him for 2 years to be the DH. He's kind of the backup catcher now, but he has a 150 WRC plus in the last 11 games, 25% K rate, 18% walk rate. If he just does that against lefties this year, going ahead, he doesn't even have to rake that much against righties. Just be league average, a little bit best, and then when lefties come in, just mash. Yeah, the team needs it. J.P. Crawford, since he's come back, has been great. He's been very J.P.-like. A lot more last year J.P. than the start of this season. The Royals series was great. Two leadoff home runs. He's been doing the thing where he doesn't strike out much and he walks a lot. That's great in the leadoff spot. And leadoff J.P. dingers are officially back. And then Sebby Zavala. Haven't seen Sebby Zavala in months, it seems like. Dylan Moore's cooled off a little bit at the plate. So is Josh Rojas. Mitch Haniger continues to just be kind of mid. And Cal, again, as I mentioned, has ramped up his production again after a short slump. But here are the rest of my notes from this week. Ty France, he should be mic'd up every game. Every time any player at all goes to first base, Ty France is yapping. And I just want to know what he says. Ty France, mic'd up every game. And then on the topic of Ty France, I mentioned he looked a lot more like Ty France the past few weeks. He definitely did. And then he became the all-time hit-by-pitch leader in Mariners history, and I asked the Mariners this, where's the statue? Put the statue up. The graphic that they made for social was amazing. I think it was the best Mariners graphic I've seen in the past decade, and they've done some amazing stuff, but as a static image, pound for pound, I don't think there's a better one than Ty France, hit-by-pitch leader in Mariners history. Amazing piece of trivia to whip out in the future, because I don't see anyone catching up with him. Even if he got traded today and didn't play on the Mariners for the rest of his career, who would get close? No one would get close. But it was the hit by pitch that put him on the IL. It's like a heel contusion. Was it a fracture? Now I'm like forgetting, but his heel is hurt. And so that caused Tyler Locklear, the recently promoted to AAA Tyler Locklear, which I didn't even get to talk about, propelled him all the way to the big leagues. And I mentioned this last month. I said, Tyler Locklear's knocking on the door, and this Ty France injury just necessitated it. And his first MLB hit was a go-ahead RBI double. Just good to see him just in immediately kind of making an impact on the team. I don't have an outlook for him on like what he's going to do this year. I still think it might still be a little early. I mean, he barely got time in AAA. He was off to the right foot for sure in AAA. But maybe we continue to see more Rayleigh at first against right-handers more of the time, and they try to squeeze in Locklear as a platoon, or he's just officially the full-time first baseman, which they might just freaking do. I just wonder what happens when Ty comes back, because Locklear hasn't taken Ty's place. Given the production Ty was giving the team before he got hurt, I'm concerned about where Locklear goes. Like, do they, unless Locklear lights the world on fire, and then they're in a tough spot. But unless he does that, I think he likely goes back down to AAA. And maybe they communicated that with him and they called him up. They said, hey, Ty's on the 10-day. You're going to be given this opportunity for 9 or 10 days here. And likely, if there's no spot, we'll send you back down to AAA. Like, I'm assuming that was probably a conversation. If Ty was really slumping again before getting hurt, maybe it's a different conversation. But not amazing for Tyler Locklear's future playtime that Ty was looking great. But it's good to see Locklear get called up. He was kind of the first position player with real excitement to get called up since Julio, and even like go back to Cal, because I don't think, like, Jonathan Class A was kind of excited, but not as Locklear. Locklear has propelled himself into the top 100 this year, and I still think, I mean, coming up as a first baseman still has you kind of as a limited player. Especially not with like a premium defensive value, but good to see him on the team. And it just reminds everyone that there's plenty of position player talent in the system right now. And it's exciting. And moving on, Logan Evans. Talked about Logan Evans, another, what's looking like another classic Seattle Mariners pitching lab success down there in AA Arkansas. He was added to the bullpen last week in Arkansas, which supports what Jerry and Justin Hollander have been saying in the past couple of weeks, where Jerry or Justin, one of them had a quote where he's like, we could have him try to win the Cy Young in AA, and I think it's the Southern League, and pitch a lot of innings and just dominate, or we could shift into the bullpen and allow him to try to impact the major league club as soon as possible and as best as possible. And that's clearly through the bullpen. So I think at this point, it's only a matter of time until he is in the bullpen at the major league level, and it's going to be really exciting to see what he can do there. Every time a pitching lab success gets called up, it's going to be exciting. So that is intriguing that he is now in the bullpen. He was also added to Baseball America's top 100 last week, which is huge. That's another top 100 guy for the M's. And I can't imagine it's going to be long before Logan Evans is up with the team. I mean, it's been a carousel of options and DFAs with relievers. Like, how many guys in the past week have they called up and sent back down? Like, they just called up Brett DG again. Colin Snyder looked good after coming back from injury for two games, and then they sent him down. Who else? Bizardo is back up with the team. Jeez, who else is even on this reliever list? It's just been a lot of up and down with the relief pitching right now, and it's partially because Munoz, his back is hurt right now, and they haven't put him on the IL, so it's been a lot of shuffling in between. So I imagine Logan Evans will be up with the team sooner rather than later, and that is fun. The next note, Brian Wu. He was getting an MRI. He just got the MRI. It just got the results. And no damage, but he missed his start Tuesday. And they don't exactly know when he's going to make his next start because his routine got messed up. So I'm assuming they'll push his start back a little ways as well. But sounded like he was having similar issues as when he got called back up again. But thankfully, no structural damage. Thank God. So we saw Jonathan Diaz make a spot start yesterday, and he gave about as good as a spot start as you can ask for, and the Mariners ended up winning that game. I'm assuming we'll see another spot start from either him or, I don't know, probably Emerson Hancock, if I had to guess, for Wu's next start, and then they'll work Wu back into the rotation. So thank God no structural damage for Wu on the MRI. And then the last topic before I really get out of here for the week is the trade discourse online the past 2 weeks has been really bad. It's been awful, as expected. I knew it was going to be bad. The team being in first is only going to make the trade discourse worse. Truthfully, it's going to make it so much worse because the Mariners need to improve, and I will probably have a trade episode at some point, but I will say there's still a shocking amount of people on the internet that don't want to trade any prospects for Major League Baseball players. I have said that it definitely depends on the package, and I would have to look at the package for any good player, but there was a trade mocked up that made the rounds on Twitter that I think was on Bleacher Report for Luis Robert Jr., who's definitely would be, I would absolutely trade for. I think it was Mariners trade for Luis Robert. I think it was Luis Robert for Emerson Hancock, Cole Young, and Harry Ford. And let me tell you, I would do that trade right now. I would do that trade. Emerson Hancock, an easy trade throw in right now. I think I'm just leaning towards trading Harry Ford at this point. I think his value is super high at the moment. The Mariners have a franchise catcher right now, and Harry Ford, while he could shift to a corner outfield role, a first base role, I think there's still plenty of question marks for you to include him in a trade. And then Cole Young, I really like Cole Young. I like his prospect pedigree. I like what he brings to his position, but you do have Colt Emerson, who might just be a better version of Cole Young, and I'd be absolutely willing to trade those three guys for Luis Robert Jr. There's question marks. There's health question marks. That's the only real question mark. But the ceiling on Luis Robert is a top 15, maybe top 10 player in the league. The only issue I have is if you're not going to play him at center field, that's immediately going to limit his value. But what he can do at the plate, there's not that many guys that can do at the plate. And the Mariners need outfield. They need an outfielder who can hit, and I think Mitch Haniger is not that guy. I really don't think he's that guy. But trade discourse, it's only going to get worse. I will keep weighing in on it. I will probably in a week or two, probably in like 2 to 3 weeks, I'll have a trade episode. I will probably have some targets, some teams that are going to trade. I think we're going to get a lot more clarity in the next couple of weeks on truly who's going to sell and what players are available. But right now, let me tell you, I would trade for Luis Robert Jr. I'm not a prospect clutcher. And I think if you see the Mariners position player crop right now in the farm, it's pretty clear that if you think these players can be developed into good major league players, that the if you think that, then you should also think that the Mariners can replace them if they get traded in a year or two with more development. And so you should trade some of them to help your big league club right now, is my point. They're going to have to. I think they're going to have to, and they should. And Luis Robert would be awesome. I would absolutely love him in a Mariners uniform. Health issues be damned. It would at least signify to the fans and to me that they're trying to win right now. And they should be. They should be trying to win the World Series this year. And they're still, their lineup is still a ways from being a World Series quality lineup. So that's my two cents. Trade episode is on the way at some point, but probably not next week. But this is where I'm going to wrap it. Thanks for listening. Appreciate the understanding. No episode last week. That's, you know, that's going to happen from time to time. But I appreciate you listening this week. I will have another episode next week. Let's hope they end up mopping the White Sox at home. We'll see. And then we'll see where they're at in the division again next week. But, of course, as always, have a good rest of your week. And go Mariners.